Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
The Advertising Show is being brought to you today by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production with Ray Schillens here and Brad Forsythe. For your listening pleasure and for your added enjoyment, we have a very special guest. His name is George Lewis. Oh, you know George. Well, good. And I know a lot of folks have are tuning into this particular broadcast, not only this one, but the one coming up next week that we're going to do part two with George Lewis, just to find out a little bit more about who he is. If you don't know, you're going to learn a lot and have a good time along the way as well. So we've got George here in just a few minutes on the Advertising Show. Also, Jeremy Kent, our European correspondent, is looking for a new Willy Wonka. And in British lingo, that means candy, of course, anything like that. So that's Jeremy's bit for today. Brad, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing great. And by the way, Wonka, I'm not sure it translates. Is that really a toy, or is that some private part of a man?
I think
in the British vernacular.
In the British, that's exactly what I was saying. So I think, no, it's probably a nice nice piece of candy, and I'll leave it at that, Brad. With that said,
yes. Are you listening to today's podcast through an iPod or MP3 player? Well, Audible.com is our sponsor of today's podcast, and just for you, our listeners, Ray,
yes,
you and me, and everybody else, Audible's
yes,
offering a free audiobook download. You've been hearing me talk about this, Ray, and our listeners. So log on to audiblepodcast.com/adshow and receive a free 14-day trial a free audiobook download. Audible.com has a number of business titles, authors that we feature here on the Advertising Show, as well as current releases, New York Times bestsellers. It's really a worthwhile place to go check out. And with the free audiobook download, as well as a free 14-day trial, why would you not want to go? So one more time, audiblepodcast.com/adshow is where you get it. audiblepodcast.com/adshow. Sign up today, and while you're at it, tell a friend about the new free 14-day trial.
And we'll send you a set of Ginsu knives in addition to that, even though we've got to go to Walmart to get some of those things.
And a Popeil Pocketman Fisherman.
Hey, listen, the guy, the Balloon Boy guy, is in the news, Brad.
Oh, my God. I thought he'd gone away.
Well, they actually put him in jail for a while, but he's out. And he's grown a beard so that he kind of looks like Billy Mays, who died.
Are you talking about the boy or the father?
I'm talking about the father. Balloon Boy. Okay. Oh, yeah. No, he's back. And what he is doing, apparently, is hawking something very legitimate. And this is a bear back scratcher. Mm. It's literally looks like a tree branch that has a clamp at the top and a clamp at the bottom. And this guy, Balloon Boy's dad, is just he's pulling a Billy Mays trying to sell this thing. And it's really hysterical. I feel so embarrassed for him.
So, well, you know, if the hiccup girl can be up for murder, I suppose the
balloon boy can come back from jail and, yes, sell back scratchers. But if you're indeed looking for a better back scratcher, and supposedly he's come up with it, but it's really funny. It's a tree branch, for crying out loud. It's bolted to the door, and you scratch your back like that.
Wow.
I'm
surprised he hadn't gotten his own reality TV show by now, you know, as weird as things are today.
He failed at that, as you might recall.
Yeah.
Actually, he was on a reality show. He and his wife did a reality show a while back. You know, Groupon is a company that we've talked about recently. Groupon, the kind of people who send out the offer, and if you're not prepared for it, you're dead.
Right.
Well, according to an Ad Age article here, there is a Groupon-like offer in Facebook for Walmart. It's kind of cool, actually. It says in a post on its Facebook page, the largest global retailer launched the deals app Crowdsaver, which unlocks a discount once enough consumers opt in, much like the group deals phenomenon for for Groupon, and apparently it worked because what they did, they had a TV and a mount. It's a 42-inch plasma TV and a wall mount for $398. You know, they're trying to get rid of those TVs anyway because of the 3D right. stuff and stuff like that. But it says in less than 24 hours, Walmart reached the deal threshold of 5,000 likes, which triggered a discount of 18% off a nearly $500 plasma TV with wall mount. CrowdSaver puts you in charge of lower prices. So I thought that was rather interesting. Did you know that the thing that Groupon did with a Gap back in August grossed $11 million? And, of course, that is shared. Normally, I think they share, like, probably not with a Gap, but with the smaller retailers, they were sharing a 50-50 deal. So, you know, picking up a cool $5 million for putting together a Groupon, sounds like Groupon.
Production. Well, you might want to explain for our listeners that may not be familiar with it how that works. Is that also Groupon.com where they go, or how does that work?
I believe that's where they go, yes. They said the group buy and model for local deals, Chicago-based Groupon, grown exponentially over the last year to more cities, hinting that the service could also work for national businesses. Groupon launched what was the arguably highest profit deal with the Gap in August, as I said. At the time, the service said it added 500,000 users per week on average and hit 750,000 additions after the Gap promotion. So
it's kind of where you bid, where you decide what you're willing to pay and the seller decides what they're willing to sell it for, kind of thing?
No, there's no bidding process whatsoever. It's they offer a silly price on a product
or
service.
Right. And they have to honor all comers, right?
Yeah, and everybody loses money except for Groupon that makes $5 million. You know,
yeah,
seriously.
You brought up the fact that someone, I don't remember who it was, made an offer, and again, and it's got to be available to all comers, and they didn't anticipate that and had a windfall of people showing up wanting the discount, and they had to honor it, right?
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah. You know, and if you can't honor it, you're out of business, pal.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I thought that was rather interesting. We're getting close to Jeremy Kent's time here on the Advertising Show. George Lois is going to be with us, and I you know, we'll read the bio and we'll do all that kind of good stuff, but I really want to get into the heart of just a great conversation with George, as we always have. So we're going to do that here in just a moment on the Advertising Show. It's being powered by Shipple.com. It's S-C-H-I-P-U-L.com. And a platform called Tendency, which is a killer marketing platform. So check it out at Shipple.com. Willy Wonka, the search continues for him with Jeremy Kent, our European correspondent, on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
Hello and a very warm welcome to the European News Desk. I'm Jeremy Kent. Coming up, marketing shoots Costa Coffee to the number 2 slot, Jaguar appoints marketing to the board, and the search for another Willy Wonka is on. British leisure company Whitbread saw revenue for the first 6 months of this year increase by $160 million on the same period last year, totalling out at $1.27 billion. The increase was led by its Premier Inns and Costa Coffee brands, both of which attributed their growth to successful marketing campaigns. Whitbread says that Costa Coffee revenue grew by 27.7% and is now second only to Starbucks globally. The brand benefited from its first TV campaign this year, alongside a major overhaul of its marketing. The Costa is for Coffee Lovers loyalty program was strengthened and supported by print advertising, and Whitbread says that it intends to open another 130 stores around the world in the next 6 months. That should see the global total hit 1,850. Marketing builds a company's future, but all too often it is viewed as a cost and not an investment. Jaguar Cars recently moved to significantly strengthen its marketing with the creation of 2 new global brand directors, one for Jaguar and one for Land Rover, both with a seat on the board. John Edwards, currently managing director of Land Rover UK and Central Europe, takes on the global brand director role for Land Rover, and Adrian Hallmark, former executive sales director at Saab, will take on the global brand director role for Jaguar. Jaguar has enjoyed a 16% rise in year-on-year sales, and it has scrapped plans to close its plant in the UK. Instead, the company now plans to create 2,000 extra jobs. In more proof of what agencies have been telling clients all the way through the downturn, that if you invest in your brand now, you'll reap the rewards when the upturn comes. Premium chocolate brand Green & Blacks is searching for a chocolate taster and has embarked on a golden ticket Willy Wonka-style search for one lucky candidate. A cinema campaign created by Brave is running throughout the country, supported by press advertising and a tie-up with Love Film. I wonder what the ratio of male to female applicants will be on this one. From London, this is Jeremy Kent for The Advertising Show.
J. Jeremy Kent. I hope they find Willie pretty soon, because you can't have a Wonka without a Willie. Or something like that. What did he say? It's Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show. And as always, we are get treated to a visit by George Lois, a very good friend of the show, and somebody that you, if you don't know, you need to know more about. The legendary George Lois is the most creative, prolific advertising communicator of our time, probably a commuter too. Running his own ad agencies, he's renowned for dozens of marketing miracles that triggered innovative and populist changes in America and the world culture. In his 20s, he was a pioneer of the landmark creative revolution in American advertising. He introduced and popularized the Xerox culture. He created the concept and prototype design for the New York supplement for the Herald Tribune, the forerunner of the New York Magazine, made a failing MTV a huge success. With his I Want My MTV campaign, helped create and introduce VH1, created a new marketing category, gourmet frozen foods with lean cuisine. You probably had that for lunch today. And if I could name a few, Jiffy Lube, Tommy Hilfiger, USA Today, ESPN. It goes on and on and on, not to mention Robert Kennedy. There's many books by George, including the first one that he wrote back in 72. It's called George, Be Careful, an autobiography. And we are just, happy to have you back, George. It's always so much fun to talk to you. Welcome back.
Thanks a lot, Ray. Thanks a million.
Thank you, George. We're honored to have you, as we are every so often, and you're not here often enough. But then we've had a lot of new listeners logging on to Twitter and providing questions, which we'll get through today's show as well as next week's show. And by the way, just for our younger listeners, if you hear George refer to a guy named Bill, he's talking about Bill Birnbach. And when you hear the agency DDB, which you've heard of before, that actually stands for a name called Doyle, Dane, and Birnbach. So, George has been around a few blocks in his day, and I wanted to start off by talking a little bit, George, if you would, about a wonderful film that was out at Sundance last year called Art and Copy, that featured people like Lee Clow, Dan Wyden, Phyllis Robinson, Rick Silverstein, Jeff Goodby, Mary Wells, Cliff Freeman, as well as yourself.
Yeah, the One Club sponsored it. The One Club is a combination of the art directors and writers in America, and they sponsored the show. And it was directed by a guy by the name of Doug Pryor, who's done some terrific documentaries. And he's a guy who didn't know much about advertising. And actually, I think he says at least that he started doing the film kind of looking to bust chops, because he kind of was one of the guys who didn't particularly think there was much going on that has ever gone on in advertising. And somehow he, in shooting guys like me and Mary Wells and Lee Clow, et cetera, he got to respect a lot of people and changed his mind about a lot of things and wound up doing a pretty exciting film. They showed it out at Sundance a year and a half ago, they dragged me out there, and they showed it. It was very well received. It was a run on, people running in to see the show. And at the end of the showing, Bob Redford walked up on the stage, and everyone crazy. Everybody ran back to their seats after we had talked to, he asked a lot of questions up on the stage. And and Redford's an old pal of mine. He claims he's claimed to me that when he was a young man, he was actually studying at Pratt Institute to be a designer. And he said he called me up one day when I didn't know I had never met him. He called me up one day and he said he introduced himself to me, and he I said yeah, and he said you don't understand this, but he said all my life I wanted to be you. I said, excuse me? And he literally said that when he was at Pratt Institute, he was studying my career, and what he wanted to really be is a communicator like me. What happened is that he was getting so many gigs, he was taking acting classes at night, and he was getting so many gigs that he became an actor. So I think he did the right thing.
Wow.
And you told Robert Redford you just wanted to date a few of his broads in his life, huh?
we had a lot of fun together because we've done some wild things together. In fact, when he got on the stage at Sundance, he told a couple of stories about us, you know, and too long to go on here, but he's a wonderful, wonderful man. Great, one of the great people in the history of the world.
And, you know, this many years later, here you are still working to the surprise of not many that know you. And by the way, if anybody doesn't know George Lois, I want to meet you. You will after today's show. But this many years later, you get a call recently from a company that had seen you, the CEO had seen you on Art and Copy Film, and said, hey, I liked what I saw, and I want you to come out and talk to me. And it was a company by the name of, as I recall, Super Focus. And if you want to learn about the product, you can log on to superfocus.com. But it's a wonderful product. But we're going to talk about how you are now developing a campaign that I guess is just about to launch for Super Focus, George.
Well, actually, he saw me on Art and Copy. In fact, last night it ran on PBS nationwide, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And even though they had and the name of their product at that time was True Focals, TRUFOCALS, and mm-hmm. He saw me talking and acting, you know, and acting up, and he somehow said to his partners, "This is the guy we really need." And he wound up calling me up that the next day, and they said, he told me about True Focals, et cetera, and I was amazed at the product. These incredible glasses, prescription glasses, where you literally can focus them, but with a little lever at the bridge of the nose, you can actually focus them for close and or any distance in the world. I mean, it's the most amazing invention, and so I immediately said, "Yeah, I'll work at it immediately." And I did. I changed the name immediately from True Focus to Super Focus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so. It's much more accurate, and a much more exciting brand name. And
decided, George, if I could ask, you also decided to leverage what really you became responsible for, and that is leveraging celebrities back in the 60s, one of the first to ever do that. And you did that in a big
once
way,
again, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and this was a more unusual, the most unusual one I've ever done, because I had to. I decided that I was going to do a commercial with famous celebrities who obviously had to love the glasses. But what I had to do is find people, celebrities who I thought had terrific credentials, you know, as far as career credentials, and make sure and get their prescriptions and have glasses made for them, make sure they wore them correctly, and make sure they fell in love with them. And those are the people I use. So I wound up, you know, using people like, for instance, I used Penn Jillette of that great Penn Jillette, I don't know if you know Penn and Teller's bullshit show, but it's just a great show. And, you know, for instance, he says, whenever I hear those iconic words, "Oh, say, can you see?" I always say to myself, "Not that good." Bifocals, trifocals, progressive, nothing had clarity. But now I see the world, and then he puts his glasses on in super focus. So the mnemonic, I tell people, I try to tell young people that really great advertising has a mnemonic, something memorable going on, that there's a mnemonic that's going on. And I always said that you need a double mnemonic, one with words and one visually. So what happens is people like Penn look in the camera and say, "But now I see the world." They put the glasses on their face, and then they say, "In super focus." So it's a mnemonic in words and a mnemonic in visual. And that's what I did, for instance, when I want my MTV, for instance, when I had Mick Jagger look at the camera and pick up the phone and say, "Now," and say, "I want my MTV," you know. So the campaign just started, and it's a genius product. I mean, in fact, the NASA has certified the glasses for space flight, and on November the 1st, four astronauts are blasting off on the space shuttle wearing the glasses and going to the International Space Station wearing them.
You know. That is too cool. And you've got Joel Gray in there. You've got Rita Moreno and just a whole bunch of other people who really...
And I got them involved in the commercials, obviously they were paid, et cetera, but I got to tell you, after we created the commercials, they called me and they really got to understand the glasses. They call me almost every day and say, I can't thank you enough for those glasses. The glasses have changed my life. Very few times in your life, Brad and Ray, that you work on genius products,
Yeah.
I've done it with, I think the only one that comes close to it is Xerography, when I did the first advertising for the Xerox 914 machine in 1960.
Mm-hmm. I love the close on one article. It says, this is a mighty combo, an innovative product backed by a maniacally confident campaign, and says, take that, Don Draper. Good for you, George.
George, I think a lot of our listeners might be thinking, what in the world would a guy that's done so much in this business 50 years later still be working? What drives you to continue to work in this field, George?
Supposedly I retired in the year 2000. I'm 79 now, right? So I retired supposedly in the year 2000. And my wife says, I'm not retired. She says, I'm just tired. The day I retired, I started to get phone calls from people, and I could pick and choose projects I wanted to work on, and it's delicious. It's wonderful. Instead of working with my own ad agency with, 150, 175 people, whatever it is, I work with my son, Luke, who was a photographer and who was a whiz on a computer, and he and I are like a two-man ad agency, and it's great because in the morning I just kind of mumble and give him a kiss, but I don't have to say hello to 100 people every time I walk into the
Nice way to spend your day, huh?
Yeah, think about it. I used to work at my ad agency, and you'd say, good morning. Hey, Joe, how you doing? How's the family? Hey, Joe. Hi, Dennis. You can't get out of where I made all the coffee in the morning, Here I just sit down with Luke, and we go to work,
George Lois is our special guest here at the Advertising Show, America's Master Communicator. Done a few things along the way, and we'll talk more about that here in just a moment with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth at the Advertising Show. So glad you're here.
You're listening to the Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth.
Stronger than dirt.
Back with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth and a very special guest today and next week as well here at the Advertising Show. His name is George Lois. George, welcome back.
Thanks a lot, Ray. Thanks, Brad.
Yeah, and before we get to our Twitter questions, which are coming up next, George, Martin Scorsese once told you that he remembers exactly where he was when he first saw Muhammad Ali as Saint Sebastian on the cover of Esquire, which, of course, you are well known for a lot of things, but that in particular, your development of Esquire covers and certainly your book recently that showed a lot of the Esquire covers and added your commentary to that very popular book that's been out for a year or so. If you're interested, Google it. Tell our audience, if you would, George, how you came to begin doing the Esquire covers and pretty much what the thought was, the conceptual idea behind what you did with those covers.
Well, in 1960, I left Doyle Dane Burnback, the only creative agency in the world, end quote, and I started the second creative agency in the world, Papert Koenig Lois. It was the first time an art director's name was even in the masthead of an advertising agency, and we became very successful very quickly in 1960, and I became the hotshot art director maybe of all time at that point. And And at Esquire magazine, there was a young editor by the name of Harold Hayes, and in 1962, he became the head editor. And he had been reading about this hotshot, you know, graphic designer, art director, you know, in the advertising columns, you know, which was always very important in the New York Times every day. And something made him, and he had just taken over being the editor, actually. And something made him call me up and ask to have lunch with me, and I said I would, and we had lunch, and I didn't know what he wanted to talk to me about, but his question to me, kind of left field, was, is there any way you can help me do better covers for my magazine? And I had never done a cover for a magazine in my life, and I said, well, how do you do it now? How do you do them now? And he described this long process with him and the editors and the art and the designers getting together and having meetings, et cetera, et cetera. And he went on and on and on. I said, oh, my God, group grope, you know. And he said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, I mean, that's no way to do anything. It's not the way you work with the writers. No. I said, well, and then obviously you don't have anybody there who knows how to do great covers. So what you have to do is go outside and get somebody who can do great covers, somebody who understands, who's a great graphic designer, somebody who understands the culture, somebody who's ahead of a culture, hopefully somebody who understands politics, blah, 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 blah. And he said, well, he said, how can somebody who doesn't work at the magazine do great covers? I said, it's the only way you can do it. So he said, listen, pal, he had a deep southern accent, a southern liberal, which was an oxymoron at the time. And he said, can you do me a favor? Can you do me just one cover? So I said, sure. When do you need the next cover? He said, well, next week, but I'll give you one for a month there. No, tell me the one next week. He said, what do you mean? I'll deliver you the cover next week. So anyway, he gives me a rundown, quick rundown of what's in the magazine, that issue, about, you know, having lunch at the Four Seasons restaurant. And one of the things he mentioned was, the upcoming fight with Floyd Patterson, who was the champion of the world, and Sonny Liston, who was the challenger, and Sonny Liston was an 8-1 underdog. So what I did is I immediately knew I had to do something that would knock everybody in their ass. So what I did is I called the fight and I called the fight by saying that Sonny Liston, the 8-1 underdog, was going to not only knock out Floyd Patterson, but kill him. For instance, the visual I showed with a guy who looked like Floyd Patterson laying on his back in the middle of the ring, and everybody in the ring, you know, and the ring emptied out. Not only the 25,000 people emptied out, but, his handlers, his family, the writers, et cetera. And when the issue came out, and what happened, the issue came out, everybody panned it, everybody said it was ridiculous. And a week later, the Liston knocked the Patterson out in the first round, and everybody was shocked by the cover. And from that point on, I did the covers for the next almost 10 years, and the circulation went from 500,000 to over 2 million. And the end result was that people everywhere who know anything about media, a certain magazine business, think of the Esquire 1960s as the golden age of journalism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, georgelois.com is a great place to go if you want to see some of those covers, or just Google George Lois and Esquire covers. You'll see it. Go buy the book is also good advice. Ray and I love that book, George. Real quickly, Twitter submitted question from Little Colomar, wants to know, people don't talk about advertising the way they did during the golden age of advertising back in the 60s, and he wants to know why.
Well, because advertising today sucks.
When I started my agency in 1960, it triggered the creative revolution, because it was Doyle Dane Burbeck, as I said, and then we started publishing Lois. Within a couple of years, three agencies literally came out of my agency. So by 1965, there were four or five or six really terrific, agencies, truly can call them creative agencies. And it basically changed the culture. I mean, it was only maybe 1% of the advertising in America, or less. But that half of a percent just changed the culture. I mean, everybody talked about the every morning. People would get, when they were having coffee, they would talk about the commercials they saw the night before. You know, and it was either Doyle Dane Birnbach's commercials or my commercial of Papa King Lois or Mary Wells. You know, Wells Rich Green. Another agency was Carl Alley. Another one was Scally McCabe Sloves, etc. And I mean, it became. It was these bright young people, passionate people, quite the opposite of the idiots in Mad Men. No talent hacks. But passionate young people who did brilliant advertising, and we changed the world. The 60s were a truly heroic period in American culture, and certainly in American advertising.
Well, Southside Ad Guy from Twitter, and it ties in with what you were talking about, kind of has a general question about if it's harder to advertise today in a digital age than it was back then. But he also throws out the question about attention spans and wonders if today they are shorter than they were back in the 60s, and therefore advertising is a bit more difficult today than when people were maybe paying a little more attention back in the 60s.
Good question. Well,
again, I think I kind of mentioned it, in talking about the Fincity Super Focus commercial I just did. I mean, mm-hmm. I have, it's a 60-second commercial, and I talk about commercials have to be memorable. So I have the greatest architect in the world start one of the commercials off, Richard Meyer, and he says, "I have been called a visionary architect because light is my favorite building material, but now I truly see the light, in super focus, because now I see the world." And he does that line, "Now I see the world in super focus." And then I have something that talks about the glasses. And gives you a place to call, etc. Then I immediately is followed with what this Rita Moreno, who says, "Over the years, I won a Tony, a Grammy, an Oscar, a Golden Globe, 2 Emmys, and a National Medal of Arts, all with lousy eyesight, but now I see the world in super focus." And then I have some more copy about where to buy the glasses. And then I end up with another person, Penn Jillette saying, "Say, can you see?" I always say to myself, "Not that good, but now I see the world in super focus." Then I have Joel Grey interrupt them and say, "And that's no bullpen." So what happens in the course of a 60-second commercial, I literally, if you're clicking quickly through television, which everybody does, you're like a Paderewski playing a piano. You click, 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 and all you do is in a nanosecond you turn something off because you know you don't want it. If you click to one of my commercials, you're bound to hit me saying the line where somebody said, "Now I see the world in super focus," and you know what? You stick with it. You literally stick with it, and you literally sit there and you watch the whole commercial. So, yeah, attention span is always has always been very short with human beings. It's no worse now than it was then. But the point is that I do commercials. I figure commercials out so that whenever it's not a film where you're sitting there watching a film and you don't know where the hell it's going and you don't care where it's going. What you do is you sit there and you get the actual selling point and you get the excitement of the campaign immediately. Yeah. And you do, and I do it, and it's entertaining and it's fun. I mean, Joel Grey, if you're cooking fast, and there's Joel Grey saying, "Life is a cabaret, old chum." He's doing a cabaret bit. Yeah. "As you get older, your view of the world becomes even more beautiful. Except you have to keep switching glasses back and forth. But now I see the world in super focus." So the point is, if you watch one of my commercials, it's banging away at you with the concept and with the fun of the line, and it becomes literally famous. You cannot forget that you saw that commercial. You could see that. You may not see that commercial for 10 years, and you'll remember 10 years from now that you saw that commercial. So what it is, it's not only artistry, but it's the intelligence of how you put commercials together. Most commercials, people think they're doing just pure entertainment where there's like a little film and something's happening and you don't know where the hell it's going, as I said. But my commercials, but Now I See the World in Super Bowl 6 times in that commercial. And you, mm-hmm. and you're not bored by it. You're excited by it.
You know, some people might disagree, but Billy Mays and those guys, the Pitchman guys, they seem to have a sense of engagement as well, even so sometimes the product they were selling were kind of out there and wacky. Well, what's your take on the Pitchman, like Mays or the Anthony Sullivan guy?
Well, I mean, I'm giving credit for inventing the use of athletes, but putting them and using them in a fun, exciting, a way that that seems wacky, you know, where they don't look like they're doing it for the money, like that I did the Maple commercial in this night in the 1960-1967, and I had the 6 greatest athletes in the history of America to this day, you know, and it's Mickey starts off, you see Mickey Mantle, and the voiceover says Mickey Mantle, and Mickey says, "I want my Maple." I mean, he's looking and there's tears rolling down his eyes, and you cut to Oscar Robertson. Oscar Robertson, "I want my Maple." You know, it cuts to Johnny Nice. "Johnny Nice, I want my Maple." And you know, it gets to 5 or 6 guys, and it gets to a voiceover that says, "Maple, the oatmeal cereal that heroes cry for." Ends up with Dandy Don Meredith, you know, saying, "I want my Maple. I want it." Well, what happens is, those guys, first of all, I'm making a point, and I'm saying, and I have these great athletes saying that they're crying for their Maple, because they're, which is ludicrous. But the point is that every young kid, every young teenager especially, who saw that commercial, were running around their house screaming for to their mother, "I want my Maple." And the athletes, Mickey Mantle was one of the guys, and about 2 weeks after the commercial started to run, I get a call from, I think it was from Detroit, and he says, "George," he said, "Mickey, what's happening? What's going on?" He says, "George, listen, everywhere I go, hundreds of kids yelling at me, 'I want my Maple.' George, you got to beep this one." And he hung up, you know. But the point is that these guys, I mean, if you use them in a way that makes them look like they're having fun and then they're enjoying themselves, it becomes great entertainment, and it becomes a memorable ad campaign. The Maple had been selling the cereal as a baby cereal, and I told a client, "Let me try to get older kids to buy it." And the way to do it is I got these great athletes to say, "I want my Maple," so that what happened to the kids who understood baseball, who were 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 14 years old, you know, so all of a sudden their sales went up like 80%.
Yeah. George, I remember back in those days, and I know you're friends with Joe Namath. Namath was in pantyhose to promote pantyhose at one time. You used athletes to really startle the viewer and put them in an unusual environment. But yet today, I think athletes are very protective of their image and are unwilling to do that. The only recent example that I can think of is Michael Jordan in the last, 10 years, maybe 15 years, his ads for Jockey, where he was kind of making fun of himself. But other than that, I don't really remember a professional athlete of recent time that would be willing to even put themselves in a position like that. What are your thoughts on that?
Stuff that's written for them, you got to understand, these guys will come up with these things, ad agencies do it. I think most of the people who write stuff for athletes talk about them almost iconically, with bated breath, so they all have to come out looking like they're the most incredible people in the world. Maybe they are, but the point is, they're ludicrous, and it's hero worship, and hero worship is a pain in the ass unless you do it with Schumer. It's not fun to listen to, and I don't think it And I don't think it makes the athlete look very good. It looks like the athlete is doing it to be lauded and to be given and to make a lot of money. I mean, the commercials I did, I mean, these guys would do it joyously because they were having fun doing it, and they were getting, and people loved them for the humanity of what they did for me, you know. But so it's not a question of the athletes turning wanting those kind of commercials. I think it's what the ad agencies have done. That's where it goes back to saying, you know, the question about, you know, why aren't people, you know, what's wrong with advertising today? Well, you know, what's going on with, you know, it's advertising. I think people who write the copy for athletes you know, said, hey, we better make this guy look like God, you know, and that's not fun to watch, you know. I don't enjoy sitting there watching somebody, you know, like LeBron being lionized, or even, and I certainly don't like enjoy LeBron and lionizing himself, you know, as he has been doing.
Yeah, as of late. We're going to continue this conversation here with George Lois next week on The Advertising Show. This is part one of a two-part series with George. We spent some time with him next week. We want to talk next week about the Playboy article that you wrote as well, George, and just a whole bunch of other great stuff, too. But thanks for being with us this week here at The Advertising Show.
Great pleasure, fellas.
On The Advertising Show, is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show. Brad, did you want to say anything? This is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production. So
just see you next week.
All right, let's do it right here. Thanks.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.